Welcome to the Audit 15 Fun podcast. My goal of this podcast is to bring relevant internal audit topics to the table at least every 15 days. Today, I have the honor to have as my guest, Hernan Murdoch. He's the VP of Audit Content at ACI Learning. Welcome, Hernan, to the podcast. It's an honor to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here with you.
Absolutely. So you wrote a book and you recently published that book just about 15 days ago. The name of the book is The Change Agent, Transforming an Underperforming Internal Audit Department. I'll give a really brief overview of the book so the audience know what it is about. So it's about a CAE who is receiving, what would you call it, a threat from the audit committee to put things in place and make things better. Otherwise, they're going to outsource the department. So would that be a fair statement of what kind of the gist of what the book is about, or is there anything that you'd like to add, Hernan?
That is fairly accurate. The only other thing is a time period. It's 1 year.
Okay.
So yes, so no this pressure. Individual has to, exactly, no pressure, right.
No pressure.
Yes, this person needs to turn things around in 1 year. Exactly.
There you go. Okay. So with that in mind, because maybe there's someone out there who is in that position, or maybe someone out there who will be in that position in the near future. If someone is in John's position, because the name of the character is John, if someone is in John's position, what should be the first three things that they should do as a CAE?
Great question. Yes. So the first thing is to understand what the expectations are of the audit committee. That's the boss. And need to understand what their expectations are. And then you need to align your work with those. So delivering on that is very, very important. The next thing is to do a gap analysis. So now that you understand what the expectations are, where are you as an individual and as a group, as a unit? And try to find out where they stand in terms of, and I usually break things down in terms of people, process, and tools. And within tools, you have technology. But what do you have as far as process? How are they doing things within the unit and what needs to be changed about it? What does the staff look like in terms of skills and motivation and so on? And how is are they going to be aligned with your direction? And then the tools that are being used and the technology that is driving the work that is being done in terms of work papers, analytics, various things like those. So those are next set of things that they need to consider. And the third thing is to create that vision and a roadmap. Now that you understand what the expectations are and where you are from that gap analysis, then say, okay, now this is how we're going to achieve this. And not only preparing that strategic vision, but communicating it effectively with the team, because they need to help you execute, but also with the stakeholders outside, the audit committee, the management team, and then you get to work. So those are the three things that needs to happen. And then that's kind of how I set up the book as well. So you have the opening scene with the audit committee discussing the challenge that they have, that they're not pleased with the existing one. That person is let go. Then they're going to look for someone. And then later on in the story, John comes in. And then he goes through these things. So instead of saying, okay, this is one, two, three things you need to do, it is a novel, it's a story. And then the trajectory going through those 12 months.
Interesting. I've been through some acquisitions in my career in the internal audit department. And usually the first three things that people look at as they're trying to integrate systems, processes, people, those are the three things that they look at. How can we integrate people into our company, processes, in systems? It's interesting that you mentioned there people, process, and tools as the first three things that you would look at. That's a great point. Maybe for someone who is not exactly in John's position, they are not under the threat of internal audit being outsourced, but they just want to do a better job. I just, you know, there's no pressure now, but I just want to do a better job with my department, with the resources that I have. For those position, for those people who are in that position, how can they measure success? What can they do to be successful in that position?
Great question as well. I think there are two things, and they need to be reconciled. One of them is the achieving the purpose of internal audit. We have our standards. We understand what internal audit is all about. So they need to understand that and meet those standards. And then we have the expectations of the stakeholders. And that, of course, includes the audit committee and senior management. So we need to make sure that those two are reconciled. And the reason I put it that way is because you may understand what auditors are supposed to do, but then the audit committee does not. So you need to make sure that you are living up to the expectations and what the IIA calls for as far as what we're supposed to do. But then you may need to educate the audit committee because they may be steering you in a different direction that may not be optimal. The other way might be the other thing where the audit committee may have their ideas of what should be happening, and that doesn't meet with the standards and good practices. So those two need to come together. So achieving our purpose and making sure that we meet the expectations of our stakeholders. Then we have the second thing, which will be in terms of getting the feedback from those stakeholders in terms of, are we delivering? Are there areas where we can do better? And expectations change. And that's why I believe that's also very important. You may find yourself at one point in time where you understand all of these things and everything is lining up, but then the organization is changing. So now you need to make sure that you adapt and adjust to those changing expectations that may be coming from within, maybe coming from outside. And that has to do with, for example, how we set up our audit plan, because we're talking about measures, right? How you measure success. So you have KPIs, but those KPIs are going to be dependent on your risk assessment, your audit plan, how you execute, the perception and feedback that you're getting from people. Those elements are going to then inform what your KPIs need to be so you can then track your progress and make the necessary adjustments as you go. Without being too rigid, and I want to emphasize that as well, because conditions change internally and externally, but conditions change. And that's where agile auditing comes to life. It is not just a concept or a methodology. It is how do you execute? So that's also embedded into the story that John is going to look at the process. I'm not speaking specifically to the process itself, and they were not engaged in agile auditing. So he's now going to tell the staff what's going to happen as far as them transitioning from traditional audit to agile auditing and make sure they understand what that entails. And it's going to communicate outside to the stakeholders, senior management and the audit committee, that the approach is going to be different going forward and what the roles and responsibilities are. Because again, agile doesn't just happen. You need to get everybody on board and everybody has a role to play to be that flexible and to modify your approach. But then as you go along, you realize that agile also calls for a non-static environment where you need to adjust based on circumstances along the way at the project level and the organization level. So then that's part of how this again evolves with introduction of the methodology and the application of the methodology and the adaptation to circumstances during that year.
Yeah, very strategic answer there. Love it. Aligning the purpose, making sure that stakeholders are on the same page. And like you mentioned, it's not just about talking about it, but making sure that you can execute and you have people on board with you as you're executing. So
exactly.
Great point. Last question for you here, Hernan. So, you know, maybe not necessarily related to the book, but maybe you do cover that in your book. What, for CAEs, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges that CAEs have out there? And how it's the best way for he or she to overcome those challenges?
I think one of the biggest challenges we're encountering now for chief audit executives and all practitioners in general is the changing circumstances under which we're working. There are changing demands. And once again, they're happening within the organization and outside. And there are quite a few things. There are geopolitical things. There are technological things. There are compliance and regulation things. There are workforce things. A lot of these dynamics are going to impact the chief audit executive. And trying to keep up with all of that is, I believe, one of the biggest challenges we encounter. The methodology exists, but we need to put it in practice. And as you're looking at everything that's going on, I'm just going to highlight, for example, the challenge of looking at the risk assessment, audit plan, and then what you do as you go. That risk assessment may be changing so rapidly because of geopolitical issues. You have inflation, you have change of supply, you know, changes in the supply chain and various things like those. So you have to keep that up to date and then have it cascade down to your audit plan to update those maybe quarterly at the very least. And then you need to also communicate that down to everyone who needs to know that, okay, we're going to then now pivot. And how do you keep, how do you keep aware of everything that's happening? And then how do you update everything as it goes through? And I know that the waterfall approach has a lot of IT and project management connotations, but there's a waterfall element to the risk assessment, the audit plan, all that in the context of Agile. How did you get all of that downstream so that you can get things moving before you your next cycle?
Right.
When you may need to move again. So I believe that's the biggest challenge is try to keep up with all of these moving elements.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people would agree with you here. And as you know, as a lot of departments have learned in the last 3 years or so, that's definitely the biggest takeaway is you have to adapt, right?
Right, exactly.
It's not the strongest, it's not the fittest, is the one who adapts the most.
Exactly. And can stay with it all the way to the end. And actually, on that note, there's an interesting element as well that I try to describe in the book, and that has to do with the individuals. This goes back to that, you know, the process and the tool. So when we talk about these methodologies and we talk about, okay, this is great, we're going to do this. And so what is often missing is that element of the people where you generally, and if you look at a lot of the literature, the assumption in many cases is that, oh, everybody's going to come on board. Right. We talk about what are the benefits and why should we do this? And we kind of sell the concept. And the unspoken implication is that everyone is going to, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Let's do that. Well, that's not always true. So within the book, I have the staff and there are people who are going to embrace the ideas differently. And some of it has to do with their emotional dynamics, their skills, their tenure, their expertise, right? Different people embrace new ideas differently for a variety of reasons. So I also introduce that and describe this individual, the chief art executive, who now needs to navigate what is widely understood as being an optimal approach, mm-hmm. and get everybody on board when people are embracing it at different speeds and with different levels of enthusiasm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Change management. I mean, that is definitely a big challenge because you have to get people on board.
Exactly.
And like you mentioned, people may adapt at different speeds. So really do appreciate you being on the podcast, Hernan. Thank you so much. And maybe just final words related to the book. I know this was a different style of writing that you had compared to your previous book. So maybe just some final words on the book for the audience here.
Yes, sure. So as you look around, whether it's online or you go to a bookstore somewhere, you see a lot of stories and novels about police officers and investigators and spies and lawyers. There are a lot of stories and novels about those professions. And I've asked myself, well, why aren't there stories about internal auditors? So I decided to write a story about internal auditors. So it's been great talking with you, and I hope that you and everyone else listening to the podcast gets a copy and enjoys it and gives me feedback. So I believe that this is something that's making learning different and leveraging the concept of storytelling as something that's been true for millennia. So right. Trying to embed that into how we learn today as well.
There you go.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Hernan. A novel for internal audit community. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
My pleasure.